Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome back to the Popcorn Hour. I'm your co-host, Matt.
And I'm your co-host, James.
And this is going to be our Criterion of the Month, which is...
The Grand Budapest Hotel, which was directed by Wes Anderson. And you want to get into the overview and stuff?
Yeah. So, like you said, directed by Wes Anderson, it was released in 2014. Inspired by the writings of Stefan Zweig, right?
Yeah,
Zweig. Okay. Especially with his themes of nostalgia, loss, and the fadings of old Europe. It's got a star-studded cast, which we'll get into. Definitely very surprising.
Definitely one of the most, like, probably stacked casts of... probably the most stacked Wes Anderson cast, and probably definitely up there with one of the most.
And it was just some of the casts that were, like, well-known actors were kind of just out of left field. Didn't really have too much of a part at all. They were just there for a few seconds or a few minutes.
Like Owen Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah. So this movie, I've never seen it. I watched it today. I've never seen it.
This was one that I've really wanted to watch. I was going to watch it before I watched Phoenician Scheme. Because I know that he was kind of going back towards this movie for inspiration. And I realized that they had a Criterion, and I was like, I'd rather wait and watch it for the Criterion. So I watched it last night, went in with very high expectations, because this is known as Wes Anderson's magnum opus.
Which means what?
Like his best.
Okay.
And I don't know if I 100% agree with it. I feel like there's an argument for some other ones. But I definitely think this is where he really got his style, like, down perfectly.
Okay.
This is my favorite adaptation of, like, his quirkiness.
Yeah, the movie...
Phoenician Scheme was pretty close, but...
Okay. This movie was definitely quirky. This movie won 4 Academy Awards, including Best Costume Design, Best Production Design, Best Makeup and Hairstyling, Best Original Score. It was nominated for 9 total, which included Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they rightfully won those.
Yeah.
Out of this whole thing. So, okay. Well.
You want to start off with, well, not really start off, but kind of go into what we watched.
Yeah.
Listen to the last film.
Yeah. So.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, yours is going to be quick.
So, I didn't log it because it wasn't really fair, but I passively watched Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz.
Yes. Okay.
There was another one. There was, like, a few more that I kind of passively watched. And then I watched Never Back Down,
because
I was thinking about it a lot since we talked about it on the Best Worst Movies. And, obviously, The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yep. Okay.
But I'd got 4 movies yesterday at Barnes & Noble, and then forgot to bring my PlayStation to my dorm, so I couldn't watch them last night.
Oh, that sucks.
I got to great for.
Nice. Okay, so since we've last filmed, I watched Transformers Rise of the Beasts. Sorry. Which I didn't realize that it wasn't a part of, like, part of the Michael Bay's.
The Bumblebee.
Yeah, one. So it's like a totally different thing. So I didn't like it at all. I thought it was really unnecessary. So, but Superman came available on streaming on Friday, I believe.
Yeah.
I immediately bought it. I know a lot of people are upset that it cost $30 for a digital copy of a movie.
It's still in theaters.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the reason why they did that is because Peacemaker is coming out this Thursday. So he wanted to just kind of get it out onto streaming before that. So,
which makes sense. So when I bought it, I watched it almost immediately. And then yesterday I watched the 2017 Power Rangers movie.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. That was I saw it on Netflix random. And I was just figured I'd only watched it one other time, I think.
I think I've only seen it once. I do think that is one of those movies. That movie to me is like a fan four stick.
Yeah.
It's pretty good up until they get their suits or up until they transform. It felt like that movie felt so much like Chronicle.
Yeah.
And like Echo.
I think it was good up until
I think it's up,
like the first 30 minutes. After that it kind of
I think it's declined. Good up until they first suit up.
That's like pretty much the whole movie.
Yeah.
Cuz they suit
until they get their powers.
Okay.
That's what I meant, the powers.
Yeah, okay. Cuz I looked the first time they morph were an hour and 30 minutes into the movie and there's 33 minutes left.
That's how I felt about the first Venom.
Oh yeah.
He doesn't put on the symbiote he doesn't put on the suit or whatever you want to call it until like 50 minutes in the movie. The movie's like an hour 40.
Yeah. Yeah. So Power Rangers had a lot of potential and they chose not to do anything. I think the best part of that entire movie was the original Mighty Morphin theme playing when they go to Angel Grove.
I think the best part of that movie is when the credits start rolling.
That's fair too. Yeah. I think it had a lot of potential. And then I watched Superman again.
You said Elizabeth did not like it.
No. So I'll read what she said. Can I send it to you?
Mm.
So she said that...
She sent me a text about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She said we were an hour into Superman, and she thought that the movie is way too drawn out and should have been over by now. And that a lot has happened, but also nothing has happened at the same time, which I don't agree with her at all. She likes more realistic superheroes because she says she likes Spider-Man and Iron Man. That's pretty much it.
Which Spider-Man?
Tom Holland's.
Okay. I don't want to use the word hate. I really don't like Spider-Man Homecoming.
I don't either.
The worst part about the movie is the characters. And I guess that could be because Michael Keaton's character is just pretty well done.
Yeah.
So all the other characters are eh. And they're just better written in the later movies. So the later movies made that one worse. I really liked Homecoming when it first came out. But
yeah.
I'm not going to go on a tangent about Spider-Man.
Yeah. So I watched Superman twice in one weekend, which was nice. But yeah, you ready to talk about this?
Yeah. So because this is a Wes Anderson... I kind of want to go into the cinematography first because his is so specific. Real quick, I don't know what your rating is yet. I think you probably saw mine.
No, I didn't.
I gave it a 4.
Okay.
And you?
I'm going to wait till we get to the end because I literally just finished 20 minutes ago.
Okay. What would you give it right now?
Right now?
I think when I finished it, I would give it a 3.5.
That's probably where I'm at, is a 3.5.
I feel like on a rewatch I can go up to a 4.5, and I feel like at the end of this episode I'll probably go up to a 4.5.
Okay.
So if you've never seen a Wes Anderson movie, he's among film people, he's most known for The Grand Budapest Hotel. And among like a general audience, he's most known for Fantastic Mr. Fox, which that is still my personal favorite because I feel like his style works so well for an animated type of movie, or claymation, I guess. And it I love his style, and I know people are starting to hate it now because it's very repetitive and overdone. It's very symmetrical, very kind of 2D and flat, and he really loves the usage of miniatures or scaled down models and to make them intentionally look like models of whatever it is.
Yeah, it's I noticed that a lot in this movie.
And he does elements in this movie that I feel like, or in any of his movies, where if you were to see literally them do the exact same thing in another movie, it would look terrible. Like the skiing scene.
Mm-hmm.
If they did that like any other movie, it would be terrible. Everyone would be like, this sucks.
I like that scene a lot.
But because of just his artistic vision of film, it's just Wes Anderson. That's just how it is. And it makes it more charming and more of an enjoyable movie,
mm-hmm.
I feel like.
When I watched it, I got a lot of, like, a really strong feeling that I was watching a theater production.
Yes, that's what, it does feel like it's on a stage.
Yes.
And everything's kind of like, I'm thinking, I don't know what it is, but there's like a movie or something where it shows like Pinocchio.
Uh-huh.
And then they're like rowing, and it's obvious that they're not moving. And then, like, you could see like the waves are just kind of like cardboard just moving over.
Oh yeah.
Or like, I don't know if you've ever seen in the Barbie movie when she's like going to the real world.
I haven't watched the Barbie.
Everything movie. Looks very fake and plasticky, and that looks very inspired by Wes Anderson.
Okay.
And he just has such a weird, quirky vision for how people talk. Like, he's very specific. Like, apparently Steve Goldblum wanted to change the Jeff Goldblum wanted to change the word the to Anne and in one of his monologues.
Mm-hmm.
And Wes Anderson was like, no, that's too different. He's very specific. Like, the scene where Harvey Keitel is slapping one of the characters, they did that 42 times.
Really?
42 takes.
Why?
Because he's so... He is such a visionary for what he wants. He's kind of like David Fincher.
Mm-hmm.
He wants... perfect. That's why everything is so perfect. Like, if something is imperfect, that's intentional.
Oh, okay.
Like, there's literally one point where the main character has a journal open and or like a little notepad and there are no lines in it, and then he felt like the character should have lines in the notebook, and you don't even like see the notebook, but and then there was this thing where they had to like switch it out with props and stuff so it had lines in a notebook that you don't really see.
Oh, okay.
He's very, very nitpicky about what he wants.
Okay.
And it's...
Yeah, the dialogue seemed very specific.
It's very casual.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, my mom just died. Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, there was like... Like, the character Zero, no emotion whatsoever.
Because that's the weird thing with their characters. It's like, I don't know what he tells the actors, but they literally have... it's like... From the nose up, nothing.
Yeah.
There's nothing behind their
eyes. No expressions.
And it's, I think it was most well done in the Phoenician scheme.
Mm.
How he did that with specifically, I don't know. I mean, all the characters were amazing. It probably, what was his name? Michael Cera's character was, I kind of wish that Michael Cera had a part in this movie. I don't really know where he would fit, but I feel like Michael Cera is the perfect person for a Wes Anderson movie, and I'm a little disappointed that it's taken so long for him to be in one.
Yeah, but. Okay, yeah. Yeah, Michael Cera is very, very emotionless sometimes, but like has dry humor along with it, which I felt like there was a lot of dry humor in this movie.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of parts where I just busted out laughing because I thought it was hilarious.
I do, oh, like the scene where the hotels are calling each other?
Yes.
I was laughing at every single one of those. Yeah. I like the second one, just laughing.
Yes.
All the stuff in like the prison that they show, laughing.
Yeah, it was really done well. I did
definitely probably his funniest.
Yes, it was really funny. And I think the only issue I had with the entire movie itself was the like it was hard for me to kind of keep track of who the which character was which.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they were like saying names like Surge, like at first I didn't know who that was. I couldn't, and then I finally figured out who it was, and it was fine. But at the beginning, it was kind of hard to figure out who was who. And then I think he did a really good job with figuring or doing a smooth transition from Because this movie is a story within a story within a story.
Yeah, he loves to do chapters.
Yeah.
And there's like 6 chapters in this.
Yeah. And I think he did a really good job transitioning into each story within a story within a story.
Mm-hmm.
So that you fully understood. Whereas sometimes they just kind of go back and forth too much. But this was like, oh, we start here. Now we're going into the story. It felt like
you were going into a tunnel.
Yes. And then you start here. And then you go into the story within the story. And then you're there for a second. And then it goes more into that story within a story. And it stays there for a majority of the movie. Cuts back a little bit, but immediately kind of goes back and you're not confused at all.
Mm-hmm.
Which I liked a lot.
And especially his like color for the movies, like his color scheme is very, it's known as like the orange and teal. Yeah.
It's very orange. This movie's very orange.
Yeah. It's probably, like, especially Asteroid City, that one is very orange and teal. But it's just, if you haven't seen this movie or any Wes Anderson, it is so different. And people try to replicate it, but it's just, nothing can come close. I was watching this episode of Breaking Bad yesterday where he's, like, comparing himself to Coca-Cola.
Mm,
yeah. And it's like, you're just a cheap knockoff. I'm classic Coke.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Wes Anderson with his vision, he's like classic Coke, and everyone keeps trying to replicate it and trying to like change it and make it their own thing. But like, who wants to live in a world without Coke?
Yeah.
Yeah. But really enjoyed this movie a lot. Is there anything else you want to say before we get into spoilers? Cause I'm ready to jump into this.
No, I think we're good to go into that. We've pretty much hit everything so far. So, you want to go into spoilers?
So from now on, there will be spoilers. So proceed with caution.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to go straight into the characters.
Yes.
Because definitely one of the more pleasant surprises was Ed Norton. I do feel like he just was a little off because I didn't really think that he should fit into a Wes Anderson movie
mm-hmm.
like this, that type of character, but Wes Anderson wouldn't put him in if it wasn't perfect. So I do think his character was really well done towards, like, by the time we got to the end of the movie, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I think it worked really well because he wasn't in it that much.
Yeah.
Like he was in short little spurts throughout the movie.
And he was really funny, like the shootout scene where he's like, why are you shooting them?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, it's, he was saying it's Adrian Brody, that his character, and he's like, oh, is this, whatever. And he's like, oh, but it's him. This.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay, everyone is under arrest.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just funny.
That part specifically, I was kind of like, okay, there's two different ways you could go about this. And I think Wes Anderson chose the right one to where he kind of just ignored whatever Ed Norton's character just kind of ignored what everybody was saying and was like, okay, the easiest thing for me is to just put everybody under arrest, nobody move, and things like that. So I think that was really funny. I think the funniest part of this movie was when after the skiing scene and get off the cliff and stuff like that. Willem Dafoe, who was a weird surprise.
Yeah. Speaking of him, that jacket that he wears was fully designed for this movie by Prada.
Oh, really?
And it is a couple of grand.
Oh, but yeah.
That is a cool, like, yeah. The flask with the holster.
Yeah, that was cool.
I liked it. He's up there for, like, a Wes Anderson villain. I really liked him a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
But his...
Yeah, so the because not only is he's walking and you only see his feet and he's walking by and then you see Zero's feet just hanging out. Yeah, like some weird cartoon.
It reminded me of like the Claymation Rudolph movie.
Yes, yeah, okay, yes, I did think so too. And then Gustav's just hanging out the edge and he's kicking, stomping the ground because it's snow. And then all out of nowhere, Zero just collects himself and just shoves Willem Dafoe's character off the cliff. And I don't know, it might have been the way it was shot where I was
like... He looked like a Red Dead 2 ragdoll.
Yes, yeah. And I was just like, what is happening? But I thought that was the funniest part of the entire movie.
I thought the funniest part is when Zero and Agatha, when it shows their like dates, mm-hmm. and they're... he's like, on the third date, I asked her to marry me. And then he goes, will you marry me? And she's like, yes. And then they just start like aggressively...
attacking each other in the theater? Yeah.
But it's so obviously like fake.
Yes.
But it's just funny.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Yeah. All the... So, I think all the characters did really well. And the surprise, like, cameos, I guess you can call them. Like, Bill Murray.
Yeah, that one was...
That funny. Threw me off. And then you get Owen Wilson towards the end.
Bill Murray is a great person for Wes Anderson movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. But yeah, the amount, let me look.
There's so, just like 40, I feel like. Not as much as Happy Gilmore 2, but.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think, obviously, Willem Dafoe was surprised that. Jeff Goldblum, Edward Norton.
Who's Steve Goldblum? Oh, and he's the guy that, he's the voice actor. He did like Wolverine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jude Law.
Yeah. I don't know if Adrian Brody's not really a cameo, mm-mm. but like I saw a list that he is technically a cameo for some reason, even though he's a big role. What's her name that played the old woman?
Madame D? Or is that her name? Madame D?
Yeah. What's her actress name? She was a surprise. I did not expect her to be in it.
She looked really familiar, but I couldn't place who it was.
She was the high, whatever her name is from Doctor Strange, the bald.
Yes. Chick. Okay. Yeah. I was like, who is this person?
Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
So this movie, they didn't spend a lot on a big budget. Or that didn't make sense. They didn't spend a lot on, like, everything entirely. They try to lowball everything. But the actress that they wanted to play her character couldn't do it because of scheduling conflicts. So they got Tilda Swinton to do it, and it took her, like, 5 hours in makeup, hair and makeup.
Oh, my gosh.
To do that, like, short scene. And that, when Gustav sees her dead body...
Oh, my gosh.
It's so funny. When he's, like, You look better than you have in years. You look alive. Yeah. That was so funny.
Yeah. And then he notices her fingernails and he's like, oh, you did change it. It's perfect. It's like, that's like, she's dead.
Oh, another hilarious moment was Jeff Goldblum's character. When Willem Dafoe is like holding his cat and then just throws my cat out the window?
No. And then he goes over there and looks.
Is like sprawled eagled.
Yes.
On the pavement.
That was...
And he, like, it's like he's at the dry cleaners and has a card for his dead cat, his, like, Persian cat.
Yes.
And then he just walked out holding a duffel, like, a trash bag.
Yeah. That particular scene, and then he's, you know, running-ish or trying to escape from Willem Dafoe. And there was it was, like, a split second, but he was in the dark, and he turned, and there was a light, and it was just his glasses that glowed.
I love that shot.
That was really cool.
I loved that shot. It kind of reminded me of Sin City.
Yeah.
And I really wish that there was another movie made like that where, like, it's just silhouettes or something, and all that is illuminated is, like, glasses or something like that. I feel like that would work a lot better for animated, but that looked really good. Reminded me of, like, the animated series.
Yeah, and Batman Beyond, there was one episode where it did that quite a bit, and that's what it reminded
me of. It's the episode where the actor for Terror, right? Or no, it's... Like Batman's like who he idolizes, that character from that movie.
No, I was thinking about it's like the third episode of the first season, and it's like a kid that his dad like hates him kind of, and but then he takes control of his like construction robot. It does that right there quite a bit. It also reminded me of the poster for Thief.
Yep. I was kind of wondering how they did that shot because it would I feel like there's two approaches to this. You do practical, but because it was so short, it makes me think it wasn't. Because it was only like half a second, I feel like it was, and just in post, because it didn't really have like a natural reflectiveness to him.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the way to do that would just give him reflective lenses, mm-hmm. and then just like have a bright light in front of him, and then just lowered like the exposure and just dim everything.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to use like camera terms because people probably don't know that, but I feel like in post it would have been just easier just to take your slider, drop the color, and then just put two gray circles because they were just flat gray.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that was that's an easier way to do it.
Oh, okay. I like that. That, I mean, it was only like half a second, mm-hmm. so, but it was really cool.
I liked Willem Dafoe's, like, how his eyes were so sunken in because his eyes naturally are, but they were like black.
Yeah. And did he have like stuff in his like teeth or like,
I think
like
so.
Prosthetic or, you know, whatever. Mm. Okay. Cause at certain parts of him look, or certain scenes, it was very noticeable. And then if it was like a shot of like his actual face, it really wasn't noticeable. So it was kind of weird, but yeah, I wasn't sure if he actually had, fake teeth in or whatever to make it look like a, he was more of like a cartoon villain,
yeah,
for the movie.
My biggest issue with like the character of Zero was the actor. He's definitely most known for
Spider-Man movies
being Flash Thompson. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really like the portrayal that they chose for that. And once he was in this, I was kind of like, okay, we'll see what he does. Mm-hmm. And he was probably my favorite character,
yeah, in
like his older version. I'm surprised that he hasn't done more like serious or critically acclaimed roles after this, because that was his first big movie.
Oh, okay.
And I know that they had a really big problem with trying to find someone for that, because they wanted originally for the actor to be Arab. Mm-hmm. And then they just couldn't find anyone that really fit the role.
Yeah.
Because Wes Anderson's so nitpicky.
Right.
So they searched around the US, the UK, everywhere, couldn't find anyone. And then they kind of expanded their search to other ethnicities that were similar-ish. Mm-hmm. And then they found him. And they were like, oh, he's perfect for this. Hmm. Another thing, speaking of the older stuff, I really like the aspect ratio changes of this. So when it's when Zero's telling the story, it's in like a 4:3 aspect ratio, so the bars are on the side.
Yes, okay.
And then at the beginning when it's doing the exposition, it's more just boxed in.
Yeah.
And then once we see like the future, it's a standard cinematic form with the black bars on the top and bottom.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting. That's where they try to tie in like the nostalgia, because like showing how much older it is. But that was, I really enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah.
Usually I don't like when movies do aspect ratio changes.
Yeah.
And if they do, I usually like it when it's an actual transition, but I liked how this one was.
Yeah.
I like how the aspect ratio is telling a story, and that's something that not a lot of detail goes into stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah. I also liked how they did a really good job showcasing the time frames, with
dates,
transition slides, the dates and things like that. So there was no confusion or no question where we were at. Mm. So even like
even when it is jumping around.
Yeah. Even when Gustav gets like arrested and it's like 1 week later,
October.
Yeah. Or and like then, November 17th, yeah. You know, so that was good. 'Cause sometimes I really just get bothered when they don't do stuff like that, when there's so much of it. Mm. And like you get kind of confused as to what time frame we're at, but this one did a really good job.
I really enjoyed like going back into like the set design and stuff. So the hotels are like 8 different hotels. Mm-hmm. And actually in the opening shot, well, they also did the makeup, like when they're filming in the lobby and stuff, they did the makeup everyone's makeup in the lobby to save time. And when we see, like, the old Zero, like, sitting in the chair, the actual manager or the actual owner for that hotel is at the, is in the lobby. Like,
oh, really?
Sitting at the front desk.
Oh.
But, like, the miniatures look so cool because the, what you see on screen when they're establishing, like, the elevator train thing or, like, the hotel, it looks like a painting.
Yeah.
That's just real. Like, that's a real prop. Oh. Like, the elevator is a real thing. It's a little miniature elevator.
That's what I figured it was, because it did look off in the sense that it didn't look like a giant elevator. But I like those a lot. Like, the elevator scenes were really nice.
Or another one that was kind of, that is funny to me, is when they're in the train, it's literally just like a, it's just plywood, basically. Like a small plywood thing, and then there's just people with, like, shapes or something.
Oh.
It's really small. It's literally, like, as big as from, like, me to you.
Oh, okay.
It's really interesting. It's weird how West does stuff, especially if you look at, like, the behind the scenes of, like, Fantastic Mr. Fox. It's, like, they're just, like, in a garden, and they're all, they're just filming it, but they're just getting the audio from it, and kind of, like, seeing how they physically act.
Yeah.
But they're just, like, in a random office, just wearing normal clothes, and it they're just, like, filming on, like, it looks like a camcorder.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to see how he works compared to other directors.
Yeah. Yeah. This, so, one of the things that I really liked was when Gustav escapes prison. And
the perfume thing?
Yeah, and the, he's, Zero just forgets everything or doesn't bring everything. Or, like, he's like, oh, what about the disguises? He's like, we're wearing them. He's like, what are you talking about? And it's like, oh, I thought you were would have, you know, grown out your facial hair or whatever. But, and he's like, no, I wanted you to bring, like, mustaches and prosthetic noses and stuff like that.
And he's like, oh, wait, please have my perfume.
Yeah.
He's like,
I forgot it. Yeah. And then it didn't happen the way I expected it to, but then, like, he gets really mad. Gustav gets really mad, kind of. But then he kind of insults Zero, almost, and then Zero tells him, like, why he's in the position he's in. And then I thought Gustav was going to make, like, turn it into a joke or, like, say something funny or whatever, but he, like, became really serious and, like, very apologetic and stuff like that, and I thought that was a nice moment between those two. But they did stand there for a very long time when they should have been running to escape the prison.
Yeah,
that was weird.
I really, that was another really funny moment, is when, like, they're, like, about to break out, and then they open the latch, and there's just guards down there.
Yeah.
And the one guy just goes, ah.
Yeah. Down. He's like, I got this. Yeah, that was funny. And poor guy just died.
Yeah. Like, and then I guess it's technically a draw.
That was funny. There was a lot of, like, within serious moments.
Just, like, quick little.
Yeah, jabs and jokes and stuff like that, which was nice. I really liked the scene when they're reading the will, and it's, like, the punch-out scene. And
yeah, but, like, they're obviously, like, 5 feet apart.
Yes, yeah.
And it just...
Yeah, and then one after another, just back and forth, which was really funny.
I really like on the train when he's like, oh, no, he's with me. He's, yeah, whatever. And he goes, exit the train, and he goes, and then he just, like, they just start swinging out of nowhere, and they quickly run. Or, like, when Gustav, like, when they show up to the hotel, and they're like, you're under investigation. And he goes, no. And then just darts.
Yeah. Yeah. That was good. And then it was, and then you go, and it's a week later, and he's in the prison, and he comes to talk to Zero, and he's just all beat up. Yeah. I'm like, what happened? And then he just explains, like, oh, yeah, that you pretty much what he said was you had
to take out the biggest guy.
The biggest guy in the prison. To assert that you're not going to be, and the phrase he used I really liked, because the Rock used it a lot when he was in wrestling, candy ass. That was so funny. I don't know why. It was just because I'd like that term.
I really like the. I feel like the strong suit of this movie is the third act.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so engaging, I guess. Yeah. It's just really, really fun. When, like, everyone's, like, shooting at each other, and then, like, you see the boy with apple painting.
Yeah.
And Agatha, like, running with it.
Yeah.
And then she's, like, hanging off the thing, and Zero's like, I'll save you. And then he's like, oh. And they're, like, stuck together.
Yeah.
On the thing.
I thought she was gonna die in that moment. I did too.
And then they, like, fall into the pastries.
Yeah, because then...
She learned how to bake for the movie, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wes Anderson strongly advised that she learned how to bake, like, the actual pastries. You can actually look up how to make all of those pastries, like, that chocolate tower thing.
Yeah.
You can look up how to make it. Like, before the movie came out, they made, like, cooking videos on YouTube.
Interesting.
So if you want to make those chocolate desserts, I don't remember exactly what Gustav called them, but they're on YouTube.
Oh, interesting. I did think those looked interesting. Part. Yeah, I bet. Yeah, because baking and pastries are really hard to do. So
that I did was like how
some dedication.
When they like showed her baking for the first time, she just had flour everywhere.
Yeah.
Like in her hair and all over her face. It looked like she just grabbed it and just smeared it.
Right, yeah.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah, I like that. But I, like, I guess by that point we knew that she was going to die.
Mm.
So I really thought she was going to die at that specific moment, and then she didn't. I was like, oh, okay, well, how is she going to die then?
They kind of had a Happy Gilmore moment.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, she died 2 years later.
Yeah.
Along with my newborn.
Yeah. Zero had a hard
horrible life.
Yeah. Very horrible.
Yeah. That poor guy.
Yeah. And did you feel, like, in the beginning when he's trying to explain, like, who Gustav is, did you automatically assume that he was a con artist?
Gustav?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't pick up on that right away. Because it was just, like, I was kind of like, okay, that's kind of weird that, you know, he kind of establishes relationships with these old rich ladies. And then that later so you kind of see...
When he's, like, blonde or whatever.
Yeah.
And then... He's like, do they have to be blonde?
Yeah.
Like, yes.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. That. So I didn't catch that right away up until the will reading.
Mm.
And then I was like, oh, that makes sense. Makes a lot of sense.
I think I just read what I think the funniest moment is.
Mm.
It's when they're at the will reading.
Mm-hmm.
And then Adrian Brody calls him a slur.
Yes.
A gay slur.
Yeah.
And then... They, like, after the punching thing, he goes, if I find out that you touched my mother, he's like, I'm going to kill you or whatever. And he goes, I thought I was gay. And he goes, well, you're bi.
Yeah. He just changed it to fit the narrative.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Let's see.
It was definitely probably, I think, his funniest movie. Because now the more I think about it, it's just hilarious throughout the entire movie. It's really just a fun experience. One thing I will say that is a downside of this movie, I feel like, is the second act. Kind of drops off a little bit. Not too much, but it just kind of... Everything just kind of slows down, like completely changes the pace, but then it picks back up to what it was.
Yeah.
And then not even the whole second act, mainly just the time when Gustav is in prison.
Okay, yeah.
I feel like kind of drops the engagement. And this is one where it is pretty easy to kind of not really pay attention to what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I didn't really have that problem because I was just focused on the movie. But I felt like it was really easy to just kind of disengage from it.
Yeah.
Which was a little disappointing. But still, just really enjoyed this.
Yeah. I would say it's... seemed very fast paced right off the bat,
and then really slowed down.
Yeah, really slowed down, like once he went to prison, and then kind of after they escape and are going, you know, trying to get to where they need to go. So I did feel like that part was pretty slow, and then yeah, it did pick back up and it was fast paced again.
I do think it did really good at filling its space, because like this is about the same length is Lahane, and it's like I like to use the movie Stand By Me,
okay,
because it's an hour 30, like right at an hour 30, but the movie is just so fast paced and so quick that it's like over when you blink. And this and like Lahane just do a very good job at filling its time.
Yeah.
And it really just shows that you don't need to make a four-hour movie to make a good movie.
True.
Time doesn't really matter. Unless you're, like, cutting time to cut time, just kind of cutting parts of the movie that are necessities.
Mm-hmm.
But this just, it didn't feel, it felt like a 2.5 hour movie in a good way.
Yeah.
But it was, did really good at that. And I feel like Wes Anderson is one that's really good about slowing down pacing,
mm-hmm.
taking these long drawn out shots. It's really weird how he does his close up shots. For example, one of the characters looks at a card.
Mm-hmm.
Or like when he's talking about her nails, you don't actually see the nails.
You are
interpreting it in your mind what you think they look like.
Yeah.
But once it shows something that needs to be seen, it's just showing a PDF mm-hmm. or just a picture of the card.
Yeah.
Like when he's like looking at the card, you don't see his hand holding the card. It's literally just the card.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that was interesting.
That's just one weird thing about his style that I really enjoy. And if I were to see that in, like, I don't know, if they showed that in, like, Transformers, that would look weird.
It would look weird.
Like, yeah. If they're like, oh, it's a Decepticon, and then they, like, show the emblem, and it's literally just, like, a PNG of the emblem, mm-hmm. you'd be like, well, that looked off.
Yeah. You know what I thought the, when he was insulting her nails at the beginning, you know what I thought of? The mannequin hand in Dexter.
Yeah.
With the different colored nails. That's what I immediately thought of for some reason.
The second you said nails, I was like, I know exactly where you're going to go with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still haven't watched Friday's episode of Dexter.
We're almost done.
I don't like season 8.
I don't either.
It's weird and kind of gross.
Yeah, but it's only 12 episodes, so it's fine.
Yeah. Let's see what else we got.
What about the score and soundtrack?
I thought the score was incredible. I thought it was really good. Really liked the soundtrack. Don't know if it's in contention for like some of my favorites because it doesn't really stand out to me.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, it was very fitting.
Yeah.
I thought, especially very fitting for the movie itself, but also very fitting for the time frame of the movie takes place.
My biggest issue with Wes Anderson is also what I like him the most for, is his style. So whenever we do the Fantastic Mr. Fox criterion, it's like that we can't really talk about the style or like how it was shot because it's just the same, but it's still very different and artistic, but it's just how the people talk, how the people act, and everything is basically the same. It's just the only difference is the story.
Yeah. I think
it's obviously his strong suit, but it's also, I guess, partially his weakness.
Yeah.
As a director.
I think, just because this is the only Wes Anderson movie I've watched, it seemed as though everything is very simple, except for the dialogue.
Yes.
The dialogue is very complex.
It's weird because the dialogue and looking at it at a two-dimensional like perspective, at a 2D version of it, which is ironic because that's how you watch a movie, mm-hmm. but it's very flat. But then it's like an onion. It just keeps unraveling because like his movies are more what it makes you feel.
Mm-hmm.
But like the characters are so deep to the point where it's like you need to watch it like 30 times to like get a full, complete, definite understanding of each of the characters.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing that's really special about his movies is they're so perceivingly flat.
Mm-hmm.
But then once you kind of realize what his intentions are and what these characters' purposes are, then it just keeps going further and further.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's so simple, but so specific. Like, there's one shot where once they have the boy with apple painting up,
mm-hmm.
and it's crooked. And then it just throws you off, because you're like, how would they allow this?
Yeah.
Because everything has to be perfect. And then it just lines up perfectly, and then everything just feels normal again.
Right. Was
weird. A lot of weird paintings in this movie also. A lot of nude paintings.
Yeah. Yeah, the painting that was replaced was very it threw me off.
Graphic.
Yeah, it was very graphic.
There was a lot in the prison.
Oh, really? I didn't notice those. Yeah.
I do like the prison stuff. It's cool, mainly because of Harvey Keitel's character.
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird. And at first, I was like, I know who that is. And it was throwing me off because he was bald and had tattoos everywhere. But I was like, who is that?
Yeah.
And then I was like, I feel like I like looked it up because I was like, I'm pretty sure that's Harvey Keitel. And then it was. And I was like, that's incredible.
Was the painting?
That's not real. The boy with apple isn't real, but it took 44 months to paint.
Oh, that was not going to be my question. But was it at the beginning when Jude Law's character shows up at the hotel? Was it in the back? Because it's in the back at the end.
I think it is. Well, actually, at one point, I think at the beginning, they like show a newspaper. And if you look at like the first sentences, it explains the end of the movie.
Oh.
So,
huh.
That was a risky choice.
Yeah. That's I didn't pick up on that at all.
I didn't either. I saw a video about it.
Yeah. I did like when, speaking of the painting itself, Gustav is explaining the painting to Zero. I thought that was done really well, especially since over the last couple of years, Elizabeth and I have gotten kind of into art. We like going to art galleries and stuff like that and doing art auctions and stuff. And so when he was explaining it, I was like, okay, that was a good job of explaining how a painting is because that's how they do it in art auctions most of the time.
What I thought was really interesting about that painting is the boy with apple is it took, I don't think it took that long for them to find like someone to like base the painting off of, but it took 50 different costumes for them to figure out what he should be wearing.
Oh.
And then took the artist 4 months to paint.
Oh, okay. Do you know who the artist was?
Mm-mm. I don't remember his name.
Hmm.
But it kind of reminded me a lot of like Glass Onion. Okay. Like the emphasis on the painting.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting and cool perspective.
Yeah.
That they showed.
And in the end did, so Gustav had, he became rich.
Hmm.
And then died. He left everything to Zero?
Yeah.
But he didn't own the Budapest Hotel. Or did he? Because I was confused at that.
I don't think he...
Because they mentioned that there was an owner that was rarely seen. But then, like, Zero ends up with the hotel. He, like, traded... Oh, or he traded his riches from Gustav for the hotel specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what it was.
Another thing that I thought was interesting is at the beginning, it shows this wider perspective of the story of like that statue and like the bust of the guy. And then we see him writing about the Grand Budapest Hotel. And then we see him meet Zero and how he came up with it. And then we see Zero's story, how it just goes, tunnels down. And then in the last few moments, I was still not confused, but uncertain about everything that happened. And then it just does that again without saying anything, just shows shots.
Yeah.
And then the final shot of the bust. And then I was like, wow.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot.
I did too. I really liked how it just kind of went into it at the beginning and then went right out the same way.
It felt like, if you ever look at diagrams of like a black hole, how it gets wide and then tunnels down in the wide again, or like a Chinese finger trap.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it was...
Yeah, just like a Chinese finger trap, because you press your fingers in. You got to go into the story to get out.
What? I guess. That was... And it was so simple, too.
Yeah.
Like,
it was quick. All they had to do was just show the characters again, and then everything is just kind of like, that was the final just send-off. I was like, okay, that was really good.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. Yeah.
So, I think... That's really all I have for this. Oh, and I kind of want to talk about that costume design. I really enjoyed the costume design for all of them, and I thought that was really funny that Zero just wears the Lobby Boy suit for, like, the over half the movie.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
I don't like penguin suits, but I liked them in this movie.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
That's Gustav's, not the final shot. Wasn't the final shot when they're in the train car? And then that thing where he's like, oh, no, they have their papers. Was that the final shot? Yeah.
Yeah, because that's when he explained that he died. He got shot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Gustav's outfit really fit him specifically. Because he seemed very over the top with like appearances and things like that and very particular. So I think it fit really well. And then, let's see. I totally forgot what I was about to say. Oh, well, that's fine.
Yeah. So after this episode, what would you rank it?
Before. Actually, let me do that now.
Yeah, I definitely will be rewatching this. This is, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. If you have seen it and you don't have the Criterion, go buy it. It's really good looking Criterion. I like to flip mine. So,
did you flip it already? Okay. Because it didn't look like this when we first got it. But,
yeah. And then like the DVD is a coaster.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
And then you have the shot. Although when you
take out this top one, the other one falls. Because it's not actually in there.
Oh, maybe that didn't happen to me.
Oh. Well, it did it me.
But then you have like the pamphlet of the drawings.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cool. I looked at that. I liked that a lot.
But yeah, really enjoyable.
What's on the second disc?
I think that's just the behind the scenes stuff. Okay. I think there's just so much.
Okay.
So next month, do we want to say our next Criterion?
Yeah. It's going to be Kronos.
Directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah. Very interested to see how that one is.
Then next week, our Tuesday episode will be
Weapons.
Yeah. Will be our review on Weapons.
Yeah, we'll go watch it this week and then do our episode.
And then obviously Weapons. Movie news on Friday.
But yep.
Yeah. That's all. You got anything else?
Nope.
And in case we don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.